We covered this very important point this morning, which dealt with people's misunderstanding of the genuine path of spiritual development, misunderstanding about Krishna's focus, the focus of Bhagavad Gita, misunderstanding about what your Krishna conscious lifestyle could be, and in this way, you become fearful unnecessarily. Of course, we should be fearful of material existence. But for some reason, we have some kind of artificial confidence in material existence. We may see ourselves as competent, expert, but it's only a matter of time before material existence shows us that we don't know anything. There's some crisis you can't solve. Arjuna found himself in such a situation in Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. You may think that the battle of Kurukshetra was unnecessary, and why is Krishna pushing it? Why is Krishna pushing Arjuna to fight? Any of you here thought like that? I didn't expect anyone to raise their hand. But it's a common conception. Why did Krishna push Arjuna to fight? Arjuna didn't want to fight. What's wrong with not wanting to fight? But we have to understand Arjuna's situation and his occupation. He's a member of the military and administrative class. So it's his duty to stand up for righteousness, for Dharma, and to protect the innocent. Let us say, you're in your house with your family, and some persons come to attack your house. In Australia, they call it home invasion. Now, you call for the police, and the police, they come, and they see the criminals, but then they say, actually, we'll be building, because these criminals, they're distant cousins of ours. And so we're feeling very hesitant to do our duty to arrest them. Maybe we should just come back home and we should forget the whole thing. And what would you say? You have to do your duty. Never mind that they are distant cousins. Your job is to protect the innocent. My family is innocent. So you are the law enforcement officials. You have to do what you have to do. Never mind that you're feeling some queasiness. You're feeling some uncertainty because of some distant family relation. You know they're wrong. It's your job to stand up for the right. So please do your duty. But that's all Krishna is telling Arjuna. And remember, in Arjuna's case, it wasn't that he was simply protecting other families. His own family had been attacked. The other side trying to burn down Arjuna's house with all his family members inside. Tried to give him poison. In so many ways, tried to get rid of him. They assaulted his wife. All these kind of things. So Arjuna, how could he not stand up and protect Dharma? That was Krishna's point. Krishna is not urging unrestricted warfare, jihad, or something like that. Krishna is saying, Arjuna, you have to do your duty, even though you may be related to these wrongdoers on the other side. Even some of them may have been your teachers, your seniors, but still, you have to do the right thing. This is Arjuna's occupation as a kshatriya, to stand up for the righteous, protect the innocent. And also Krishna wants us to do that. So let us have a clear understanding of Bhagavad Gita. It's not some kind of war text that is advocating religious violence. In no way is it like that. But sometimes people make it out to be that because they haven't read Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is in a difficult situation. Because of his soft-heartedness, he doesn't want to fight. He's telling Krishna, let them take what they want, let them plunder. If they want to be greedy, that's their problem. Why do we have to get involved with this? And of course, that's not right. So Krishna is encouraging him to fight to protect Dharma. It's a crushing situation for Arjuna because he looks out on the other side of the battlefield and he sees friends, relatives, former teachers. So that's why he's so affected. Earlier today, we heard a very wonderful question. Alright, we can see that we are being swept away. We can see that we're entangled. We can see we're caught up in so many currents that are not healthy for us, not positive for us. What can we do about it? Well, this is Arjuna's question to Krishna. We discussed earlier, Krishna is asking Arjuna, how have these impurities come upon you? Now let us discuss Arjuna's response. You can put yourself in this situation and see these words coming out of your mouth. Because material nature, life in this world will do this to everyone. It will put you in a desperate situation. Look at Arjuna's honest words. From this point, Bhagavad Gita begins because Arjuna is asking Krishna what to do. Each one of us can make that same decision to get out from under the influence of the material energy and attach ourselves to the spiritual energy. It's a two-way street. The question earlier today was, is it all up to you or is it all up to Krishna? Everything is both, because life means you and the Supreme Soul. You are the individual soul. Krishna is the Supreme Soul. You take one step toward Krishna, he'll take 10 steps towards you. Reciprocation. By your coming here this weekend and hearing the kirtan, the chanting of Krishna's name, by your hearing Bhagavad Gita, you have made an extraordinary step toward Krishna. And if you apply Krishna's instructions in your life, you'll see the result. We're simply trying to inspire you this weekend to enter the Bhakti laboratory and make the test. We don't want any true believers here. We want true experiencers. We want you to enter the Bhakti laboratory, take up your instruments, and see the results. This is all that Krishna asks you to do in Bhagavad Gita. I always explain that nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say, just believe in me. That's what we're all afraid of. We're going to have to adopt the belief, just like our grandmother did. No, no, no. We are scientific. We are analytical. Apply your powers of analysis to Krishna's instructions. Act on them and see the result. You see, everywhere in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving an action program, an experience program. This is what separates bhakti, Krishna consciousness, Sanatana Dharma, from so many religious beliefs that crowd the religious marketplace these days. There is a procedure a laboratory process. And if you follow it, you'll get the results. Isn't that fair? Nowhere does Krishna ask you to believe in him. It's not important to Krishna whether you believe in him or not. Krishna exists whether you believe or not. It's like what I said. We should really believe that this is Australia. Well, it's not important whether you believe or not. This is Australia. So similarly to Krishna, it's not important to him whether you believe or not. Krishna exists, and he gives you his instructions by which you can verify his existence and your identity as part of Krishna. So please remember that. Notice Arjuna's attitude. He really wants the solution. Now, how much pressed do we have to be by material life before we take up the attitude of Arjuna? Sooner or later, it happens to every one of us. Certainly at the time of death, you're thinking like that, but generally there'll be quite a few situations before death in which you are put into circumstances beyond your control, you have no solution, each alternative looks equally bad. This is the situation that Arjuna was in Bhagavad Gita. But he presents himself to Krishna. Now, what does it mean to present yourself to Krishna? Who is Krishna? Is he just an ordinary person? The whole point of Bhagavad Gita is that Krishna is the supreme source of everything. If we don't understand that, we'll get no value from Bhagavad Gita. As soon as you mistakenly take Bhagavad Gita to be spoken by an ordinary person, it loses all value. That's why Bhagavad Gita chapters start off with Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Bhagavan, the supreme opulent one, the possessor of unlimited opulence, speaks. Now, it's true that sometimes in India, people give themselves the title Bhagavan. But what does Bhagavan actually mean? It means the possessor of unlimited, infinite opulence. So what person do you know who's like that? Infinite opulence. Unlimited opulence. The spiritual texts in India describe opulence in six ways. Wealth, strength, knowledge, fame, beauty, and renunciation. Bhagavan is unlimitedly deep in all six things. What ordinary person knows like that? Persons may call themselves Bhagavan, but are they unlimitedly beautiful? Are they unlimitedly strong? When you accept Bhagavad Gita as spoken by Bhagavan, in other words, when you accept Krishna's description of himself and put it into action, you'll see the results. Bhakti Yoga is about results, not blind faith. I can assure you, I did not, upon graduating from Yale University, I did not forego my corporate career just to have blind faith. I wanted action, experience. I have not been traveling every continent of the world for 35 years now just because of blind faith and Buddhist belief. Now, our humble attempt is to offer you the Krishna experience. That will be especially possible when you put yourself in the shoes of Arjuna and take up that same stance. Now I'm so entangled. I don't know who I am. My life is under control of so many social and economic forces. I'm feeling so much pressure. Pressure of my body, pressure of my mind, pressure from the environment. What am I going to do? I'm stuck in between two worlds. One foot in India, one foot in Australia. What will be my future? You put yourself in the shoes of Arjuna like that. And then you'll really be able to benefit from Bhagavad Gita. Let's review quickly some of the points we were speaking about this morning. This morning we dealt with the fear that by becoming Krishna conscious, you're going to give up on knowledge and information. Oh, this is completely wrong. We discussed this morning how the difference between material life and spiritual life is not that one has information, the other has no information. No, the difference is the type of information. If you are Krishna conscious practitioners, they study IT, they study the travel industry. So many things they're studying. But they know that material knowledge is not so important. It's secondary at best. The important knowledge is the spiritual knowledge. Knowledge of the soul and the supreme soul and the relationship between the two. Knowledge of Krishna as the source of all energies, the source of all pleasure. That's the topmost knowledge. So please, meditate on this point, that the Krishna conscious life is full of information and knowledge, but it's information and knowledge of the topmost importance. The other thing that we discussed was the fear that in order to practice bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, you have to get on the express train. It's all or nothing. You can't work, you can't study, you can't marry. You just immediately become a wandering sadhu. Sometimes it happens that, you've seen it happen before. When one gets back to India, your parents that you started to chant Hare Krishna. And immediately, sometimes, not all the time, sometimes, there's some alarm. Oh no! He's chanting Hare Krishna. He's going to marry, he's going to be a Brahmachari. It's not like that. You see, so many chanting Hare Krishna here, our staff. Some of them are married, some of them are engaged to be married. They are working, accounting, IT, this, that. It's not that just because you're chanting Hare Krishna or reading the Bhagavad Gita that your career is doomed. Sometimes there's this fear that there'll be too much Krishna in your life. Right? Too much Krishna. Does anyone here have any fear of too much Maya? Too much illusion? No. Too much Krishna. Where does this thing come from? Too much Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna anyway. Everything is Krishna's energy. Krishna's unlimited. You cannot measure how much Krishna there is. Therefore, you cannot even say too much Krishna because Krishna is immeasurable. But we have this concoction in our mind that it's okay to be a little religious. Go to the mandir for Janmashtami. Or if you want to go more than that, maybe once a month. And you offer some prayers to whoever, whatever is on the altar. Doesn't matter. You put a few brass coins in the box. That's it. This is the spiritual life. Anything more than that? Oh, it's a little afraid. I'm a little afraid of that. No. Just like Arjuna could fight a battle in full Krishna consciousness as a military man, similarly, you, as an accountant, as an IT officer, as a social welfare person, so I don't think anyone actually will do that job. As soon as you get the PR, you'll change. Anyway. Whatever. The point is, if Arjuna can fight a military battle, in Krishna consciousness, you can certainly do your occupation in Krishna consciousness. Please have no doubts about that. And you have so many living examples of how that's done here. We discussed this morning about the two categories, the gradualist and the transcendentalist. The transcendentalists, they are the express train. They want to immediately shake off all material attachments and go for the supreme destination. There's a place for that. There's a place for them in Krishna consciousness. Just like at any school, they have the fast track, you know? And then they have the regular students. Not everyone is going to be fast track, obviously. But there should be some facility for them, you agree? But the regular students shouldn't fear that unless that because I'm not fast track, therefore my life is finished. Yeah. You can go the gradualist route, in which you have your material ambitions, you have some material attachments, and you gradually deal with them in Krishna consciousness. That sounds okay? Gradually. You know that this world is temporary. You know that the body is temporary. Well, there's some attachment and there's some things you still want to achieve in this world. You can do that in Krishna consciousness. Krishna gives you advice in Bhagavad Gita how to do that. Whatever you're attached to doing, you do it and you offer the results to Krishna. You have a family, you offer the results to Krishna. You teach your family members about Krishna. You have a job, you work in order to give Krishna consciousness to yourself and to others. In this way, you can go on in this world, gradually developing your spiritual potency. There's room for all types, the express train people and the slow train people. They all can work cooperatively in Krishna consciousness. So please don't have this fear that Krishna consciousness is only for those who just want to throw away all material attachments immediately and prepare for the supreme destination. No? You can have your material ambitions, you can have your material hopes, and gradually develop your spiritual connection with Krishna, and gradually let the material attachments slide away. That's how hospitable the process of Krishna consciousness is. Now, once we understand that Bhagavad Gita, Krishna consciousness, is something for everyone, we still need to look at the difference in knowledge, material knowledge, spiritual knowledge. We talked about how knowledge of the body is secondary, knowledge of matter is secondary, and knowledge of the spirit soul, knowledge of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. That is the topmost knowledge. But there's something more that makes Krishna conscious knowledge special. And I hope when you understand why it's special, you'll want to get that knowledge and apply it in your life. In order for knowledge to be exalted or to be very extraordinary, that knowledge has to bring about transformation of the self. Now just think about it. What have you studied at the university that will really transform yourself? Western knowledge is not transformational. It's all about manipulating the external world, manipulating the material energy. But there's nothing in Western knowledge about transforming the self in a major way. Okay, you may argue, what about psychiatrists? Don't they help people who have psychological problems to transform themselves. Did you know, at least in the USA, amongst all occupations, psychiatrists have the highest suicide rate? So how are they supposed to help you? They cannot transform themselves, in other words. This kind of knowledge, transformational knowledge, is missing in the Western world. And this, I think, is troubling some of you. You realize that you're dealing with a huge culture of non-transformation. No one really cares about their inner self. It's all about consume, buy, get things. And then when you become distressed, when you become bewildered, when you become stressed out, just get intoxicated. That's the solution. You're becoming absorbed in a culture that has as its mantra, work, buy, consume, and die. That's all there is to it. So you're noticing there's nothing that transforms the inner self. And some of you are afraid. Is this all that life's going to be? What about doing something about my internal state, my inner space? For that, you have to turn to Krishna. Krishna is the master of inner space and outer space. So, in Krishna consciousness, we focus on the transformational power of knowledge. You may have studied accounting. Does accounting transform your inner self? Does IT transform your inner self? Does hospitality do it? But bhakti yoga, as presented by Mother Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, transforms the inner self completely. So, practitioners of Krishna consciousness are not so impressed at all by Western knowledge. It's actually dehumanizing because it presents no power of transformation. You want to change your insides so that you can be progressive. Those of you who truly want to make progress, the Krishna conscious lifestyle is for you. In fact, not only can you transform the present life, but you also transform the next life too. I wonder how many of you are concerned with the next life. Anyone? Raise your hand. Well, that's a high number. But what is life in the Western world? Who cares for the next life? It may come, it may not come. Why worry about it? Enjoy your senses now. It's the weekend. Right? No one thinks of the next life. But for some reason, you are thinking in that way. So, therefore, you have to understand how your present actions are affecting your next life. The whole point of the information that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita is to give you the best possible life now and later. Just like the children here. The nature of the children here is that they're not concerned with what's going to happen 2 years from now. They don't even care what's going to happen tomorrow. You can ask those little children back there, tomorrow, what do you think? All they want to do is play now. That's all. You can't live your life in that way, though. As an adult, you're supposed to be concerned with the future. The future means the next life and the life after that. So where do you get the information to make those kind of decisions? How to have the best life now and later? Where do you get that information from? This is what Krishna is doing in Bhagavad Gita. He's giving you the overview of your entire existence in the material world. An existence consisting of many lives. Krishna is dealing with that in Bhagavad Gita. This is the advantage. Some of you may be thinking that the spiritual knowledge of India is fatalistic. Many Westerners had that misconception. You may have also gotten that misconception that everything is karma. It's all predetermined. And when people believe in karma, then they don't push ahead because they think everything is predetermined. There's no need to work. There's no need to study. You know persons who have that misunderstanding? Yeah. But that's not what Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita. It is a fact that your material life is predetermined based on what you did in your past life. But there's a complete wide open opportunity for your spiritual development. It is a fact that you can't get one drop more of material happiness than you do from your past life. And not one drop less. The same thing with distress. You'll get all the distress that you're due from your past life. No more, no less. Okay. You might say, well, suppose I have a headache. I could say I got a headache because of the past life. So I take an aspirin, the headache goes away. Aha. Just by taking an aspirin, I change my karma. No, what happens is that you simply transfer the burden from one shoulder to another. You take the aspirin and in this way stop the pain that you're due from your previous life, but that pain will come another way. You have to get what you're supposed to get. The laws of nature are balanced to a precision beyond what we could ever calculate. So the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam asks you, why should you endeavor for material things when you're already going to get what you're supposed to get? Now when materialists hear this, they think, oh, this is horrible. This is the reason why India took so long to develop materially, because people were thinking like this, karma, it's all karma, it's all predetermined. How unprogressive. But once you understand that all your material results are predetermined, that doesn't mean you just go to sleep on the ground and do nothing. No, you endeavor spiritually. Your spiritual achievements are not predetermined. Materially, though, it's true. Everything is already decided. Maybe you know persons who, while you're working hard or studying hard, they're just having an easy life, taking it easy, and it all comes to them. You know persons like that. You get envious of them, don't you? Yeah. They don't study for exams, they get good marks. They don't struggle to look for jobs. Easy to get a good job. It's their karma. Similarly, you'll get what you're supposed to get materially. But spiritually, the door is wide open. So Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is urging you that you should use your independence to endeavor spiritually. That is what Krishna consciousness is all about. It's not that Krishna conscious practitioners are lazy, they have no drive. Some of you may have that fear that if you chant Hare Krishna too much, you take too much prasad, then you'll lose your competitiveness, right? In school and at the workplace. You won't be able to race with the rats anymore. I've already pointed out so many examples of Krishna conscious practitioners who are shall we say, the top of their game, and yet they're practicing Krishna consciousness. They're at the top of the business world or whatever your profession is, and at the same time, they have a full Krishna conscious lifestyle. Not only the husband, but the wife also, and even the children are following. So we shouldn't have these unnecessary fears and misunderstandings. Once again, look at Arjuna's presentation to Krishna. Is it possible we can admit to this without feeling fearful? I'm confused about my duty. I don't know really what to do. Should I just make a lot of money? Should I just work all night and day? How much of a stand should I be? How much should I not be? So many pressures, parents, family, society, two societies. You get pressure from society in India, pressure from society here. What to do? You're in very unique and special circumstances. Being a hybrid, you are forced to think creatively, to think outside the box. That's why your position is so advantageous. You have to think outside the box. That's why I like speaking to this group, wave after wave of overseas students, because they are in a situation in which they have to be creative, proactive. Such a situation inspires them to achieve great heights in their life. You can do the same thing. Now, maybe you have some questions about this Krishna conscious process, Krishna conscious knowledge. What do you think? Would it have some value or? Yes. Yes. Let's give you the microphone first, so all the people watching on television can hear.
My question is, you said whatever material is available to you materially, you should accept that, and only the spiritual knowledge is wide open. So, if a person struggles to get better in his or her life, say for example, wants to study more, wants to more achieve more things, and is not able to do it, will this bhakti knowledge help him to achieve better, or he should just be satisfied with whatever he or she has?
Here's the thing. Your material happiness and distress is predetermined. Not the amount, not so much directly the amount of money you're going to get. My point is, you might get more money, but you won't be more happy. You understand? You might get a bigger house, but you won't increase your material happiness. That's the point. So there's room for you to play around materially, but there's no room for you to increase your happiness or distress that's due to you from your past life. But in Krishna consciousness, there's complete room for you to expand. Now, we don't advise you. Don't work, don't study. It's all predetermined. We don't say that. Even though it's true, you don't say it. It takes some time to realize the full impact of this knowledge. We say, go on working, go on studying, but put Krishna in the center. This is the gradual path, you understand? And then by that gradual path, you'll gradually see that material life is what it is. Karma is what it is, but your spiritual life with Krishna is something else. In time, you'll see that. Because you're not going to be able to just stop studying, stop working. You're not going to be able to do that. You have to have some realization, some experience of how material nature is working. And then later, as you become more spiritually advanced, you'll be able to see these things. Then after your children are grown up and you're 55 or so, then you can retire from the world. Okay? That sounds good? Okay. So now, you can work 3 jobs, have 10 children. Only one husband, please. Don't do like the Aussies. What? Very good question. Next question? Yes. Come back.
My question is, how can we heal our ego because ego takes us away from our Lord?
What do you mean by ego? But everything that you have is Krishna's energy. It belongs to Krishna. Even your body, even your mind. So you can be proud of Krishna.
Sometimes you feel that you are better than others.
How?
You get a feeling.
How is that? How are you better than others?
Sometimes this happens because you have a superiority complex within you. And how can we feel it?
Tell me, what are some of the things a person can feel superior about? Speaking generally.
Generally, if someone is very beautiful, if someone
can achieve
success very easily.
Okay, that's alright. I am very beautiful. How long does the beauty last? Even if it's true, how long does it last? Meditate on the beauty of Krishna. Krishna is so beautiful that no words can describe how beautiful Krishna is. Krishna is the source of all opulence. He's Bhagavan. Unlimited beauty. So what is whatever little beauty we have, whatever little money we have, whatever little strength we have, how can that compare to Krishna? The more you know about Krishna, the more you'll see your humble situation. And it'll be more easy to take up Arjuna's position. You understand? You see, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining that you have a false ego and a real ego. The false ego in Sanskrit is called ahankar. And you take the A away, and you have hunkar. That's real ego. There's nothing wrong with having a real ego. What is a real ego? I am part of Krishna. I am Krishna's servant. That is real ego. You don't want to kill that. But the false ego means I am this body, I am this mind. I am Australian, or I am Indian, or I am this or that. That's all false ego. Real ego, I am part of Krishna. So you have to encourage the real ego and diminish the false ego. That you can do gradually through the process of bhakti yoga. Or you can do it immediately. Immediately. Oh. We have someone from the express train here. First you start gradually and then we'll see. Then gradually you can change to the express train, okay? But first it's best to start gradually. Anything else? Yes.
My bit confused about the karma yoga and bhakti yoga. As you said, karma yoga is predetermined, but I don't think that
karma yoga is
predetermined.
I said karma is predetermined. I didn't say karma yoga is predetermined. There's a difference in karma and karma yoga.
Okay, I'd like to contradict you, or maybe I'm wrong. I'm in the IT profession now. Tomorrow I should do some social work. I'll do something for the human being and do something for the society, do something for the good, which is, I would say this dharma as part of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Do I need to always chant Hare Krishna to get Krishna?
Okay, let's just understand what is dharma. Dharma means whatever Krishna wants. Dharma doesn't mean what we manufacture. We can't actually manufacture dharma. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's explaining what is dharma. And at the end, just in case you're confused, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, Krishna gives his ultimate dharma verdict. He says, just abandon all varieties of what you think dharma is. Sarva dharmam prachaja, and just do what I do. Mam ekam sharanam vraja. Just come to me. So dharma is given by Krishna. We can't make up dharma. We may say, well, dharma means to help people this way or that way. But we have to help people Krishna's way. We're all Krishna's parts. The best way to help people is to remind them of their spiritual identity as part of Krishna. That's the best way to work. Okay, if you're hungry, I feed you. That's nice, but tomorrow's the hungry again. You need some clothes, I give you some clothes. If your clothes will wear out, you'll need clothes again. You have a disease, I cure the disease. Tomorrow you'll be sick again. And eventually the body will die. Who can stop that? The best welfare work is to help people's spiritual advancement. Now, if I'm sick, I'll go to a doctor. I won't say, oh, I'm not the body, and helping the body is just an illusion. If there's a doctor who can cure my sickness, I'll be grateful, but I won't think that he solved my problems in life. My problems in life are not that I'm sick. My problems in life are that I think I'm this body. I think I'm the mind. I'm an illusion. So until I come to Arjuna's position, I won't be able to make any real progress in my life. Or I won't be able to help anyone else. So if you want to understand dharma, you take it straight from Krishna. I may think one way, you may think another way. If I ask him his dharma, his opinion, I ask him what his dharma is from another people. Dharma is to help people. Dharma is to play cricket. Dharma is to watch television. So many dharmas. But let us hear from Krishna, the source of all dharma. That's what we're speaking about. So I may have my opinion, you may have your opinion. But let us hear Krishna's opinion. Only Krishna can say what is dharma, because only Krishna is the source of all energy. All right? Thank you. Oh, very good questions. I think this is the best group we've had here so far. I don't know why that is so. I'll try to figure it out this evening, why this is the best group. What's that?
Because of best prasadam.
Oh, the prasadam is very good? Oh, who's speaking? Vaishnav Charan and who else? Ah, oh, I see. I'm glad everyone likes the prasad?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Vaishnav Charan, he he started coming to these programs years ago, and now he's a staff member. He's doing the greatest welfare work for the people. By profession, he's a civil engineer. This weekend, he's cooking for you all. Krishna Prasad. Because he's practicing Krishna consciousness, he has more energy, more intelligence, more strength. Hopefully, this weekend, you'll get to meet him. More questions? This is the time to get it all out.
Hare Krishna, when you said that we have to bring Krishna in center, I can understand that as from if you're cooking, you can offer food to Krishna.
Yes.
And then you can eat as a prasad.
Yes.
So in that way, Krishna is in center. But however confused, when you go to work,
very good point. The same with Arjuna. How does Arjuna fight a war for Krishna? Arjuna offers the results to Krishna. Krishna told him, Nimitta Matram Bhava Sabhyasachan. Arjuna, you can only be an instrument in the fight. Victory or defeat is not your concern. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, you do your best, leave the results to me. Offer the results to me. Fight for me. Mama Nusmara Yujamta. Fight and think of me. So if Arjuna can fight for Krishna, certainly you can work for Krishna. How do you do that? Why are you going to work? To make money. Let's say it more specifically. I know it sounds better just like to make a living. More concise here. You go. They didn't pay you. Would you go to work? Okay. So you're going to work to get money. Now, there's nothing wrong with supporting yourself. The goal is supporting your family. Are you a family man? Okay. So, you should support your family. But the main purpose of you and your family should be to develop your Krishna consciousness. That means the main reason that you're working should be to give yourself a Krishna conscious lifestyle and give a Krishna conscious lifestyle to your family. That should be the main motivation in your working. Furthermore, to give everyone the chance to have a Krishna conscious lifestyle. Just like Vaishnava Chiran, he goes to work 5 days a week. But he loves to use his earnings to help others hear about Krishna. First of all, he's giving Krishna consciousness to himself. He's not a family man yet, so he doesn't have to worry about that. But he's treating you all like his family members. By cooking for you all. By helping to put on this weekend. Okay. So, you work so that your family will be Krishna conscious. And so that you can help others to be Krishna conscious. And you'll be happy at work. You know how miserable it is to go to work? I'm going to get for me. Maybe you have tried that, yes? It's miserable, isn't it? It's not enlivening at all. But if you go to work in order to give yourself Krishna and to give others Krishna, you'll be so enlivened. That's what Krishna is asking you to do in Bhagavad Gita. The fruits of your labor used for Krishna's pleasure. Don't think you can fool Krishna. I go to work and I say it's all for Krishna. I keep all the fruits for me. Krishna's not fooled by that. You actually use the fruits of your labor to build a Krishna conscious lifestyle for you and your family and for others. Then you'll be happy. You want to support the chances for others to be Krishna conscious. What else has been nice besides the prasad this weekend? Your participation in the class has been nice. Thank you for coming. Ladies, have any more questions? I'm surprised the ladies are in this session. They're very, how do you say, they're asking questions. Usually in previous groups, in previous years, the ladies would not say anything. These ladies are, they're wanting to understand the science of Krishna. That's good. Yes?
Okay, my question will sound weird, but it's a big mystery for me. Is it true that Lord wants his beings to reach to the supreme destination to get free from the process of life and death? If it's true, then why did he send us to the world?
Yes, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, always think of him, become his devotee, and surely you'll come to him. Why are you in this world of matter, even though you're a spirit soul? Because you wanted it. You wanted the dream world. And so Krishna reluctantly lets you have it. Because you have independence. Krishna is the supreme independent. You're part of Krishna. Therefore, you have a tiny bit of independence. So you misused your independence. You made the wrong choice. Krishna is inviting you. Come back. Correct your mistake. Just like the material world is the homeland of the material body, similarly the spiritual world is the homeland of the spirit soul. You wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna, and so here you are in the material world where you can dream that you'll be happy without Krishna. The process of bhakti yoga, Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, wake you up from the dream. It's like an alarm clock will wake you up from deep sleep. The Hare Krishna mantra, that sound, wakes you up. Okay? Let's go on. Yes.
To extend that question further, Maharaj, can we use this material world to go back to the spiritual world? Like, we are already here, and we know, like, as you said, we have made a wrong choice, or we wanted to come back. So, can we use this material world in somehow to go back to the Godhead?
Everything is Krishna's energy. This material world is Krishna's energy. Why should you discard it? You see, as I said this morning, we don't say the world is false. Krishna never says that. It's not false. It's temporary. Just like a dream is not false, a dream is temporary. But how can we use the temporary body and the temporary world in order to achieve the eternal? That's the best engineering process. How to use the temporary to gain the eternal. This is the technique that Krishna is teaching in Bhagavad Gita. You don't say your body is false. You don't say the world is false, even though they're made of temporary matter. You use these things to attain the eternal. You see, both the material energy and the spiritual energy belong to Krishna. The problem is we don't listen to Krishna how to use his own energy. That's why there's so many problems. I know, some people say, the world is false, it doesn't exist. Krishna doesn't say that. Krishna gives you instructions how to live in this world and achieve perfection, even though the world is temporary and the body is temporary. That's how brilliant the spiritual engineering information in Bhagavad Gita is. So I'm hoping that you'll all think deeply about this with your fine intelligence and drop all the fears and all the misunderstandings about genuine spiritual science, all the misunderstandings about Krishna. What did you think about Krishna before this weekend? Anyone can say? Any idea? When you heard the word Krishna, what would you think? Huh?
Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna. Why Lord Krishna?
The Supreme Power.
Oh, you knew that. Okay. But someone else could say something different. What would you have thought? Yes? Anyone can say.
Huh? I used to think that Krishna is Vishnu.
Incarnation. Huh? Generally, you could say that. It's not precise, but you could say that. It's not precise, but... Anyone else? How many of you never thought so much about Krishna at all? Raise your hands. Okay. If someone said Krishna to you, what would you think? No, the young man behind you. Yes.
As you said, we have so many different gods and goddesses.
Yes, that's being honest. Yes. So many different gods and goddesses. Krishna, Durga, Shiva, Brahma, Vishnu, Nehru. Sachin. Now you're in Australia, so it's Shane Warne. Is he retired now? So he's a retired god. Anything else? What did you think about Krishna?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you
It is another supreme power. How can the Krishna being supreme? There's another supreme. Supreme means no equal, no one surpassing. What does Krishna say? Mataprasalam nanya kinjira si dhananjaya. Oh, dhananjaya, another name for Arjuna. There's nothing superior to me. Aham adya devanam. I'm the source of all the devas. So yes, we accept the existence of the devas, the demigods, but they are servants of Krishna. Brahma, Shiva, Durga, Indra, we offer all our respects to them as devas. In Melbourne, they have what they call the council persons? Councillors? And do they have the mayor? Okay, so it's like the mayor has his staff, Krishna has his staff. So don't confuse the staff with the chief. Okay? It's not my opinion. I'm simply saying what Krishna says. Now, if you want me to imagine and make something up, huh? Let's speculate. Let's imagine something. No. Our words have value when we repeat what the Shastra says, what the scientific spiritual literature say. Otherwise, my tiny brain and your tiny brain and his tiny brain, you can manufacture so many things. What about the tree incarnation? Outside here is a tree that's God. Let's all go bow down. We can manufacture so many things. But we want to hear and follow what Krishna says. Because you'll get the results, not blind faith, remember? Krishna gives you the process to verify his identity. So, I may believe this, you may believe that. Just like I may say, I believe this is Iceland. You say, no, I believe this is Austria. Another person will say, I believe this is Peru, right here. No. We may have so many crazy beliefs. But when we take the process to verify what is the name of this land that we're in, we find out it's Australia. So I want to kindly present to you that we should get away from this idea that, well, you have your belief, I have my belief, he has his belief. Let's find out the facts. And the process to verify the facts. That is bhakti yoga. No blind faith, no true believers. Only laboratory experience. Okay? That's fair enough? That's what the Gandhi say. Is that fair enough? Give Krishna a fair go. Can you do that? Can you give Krishna a fair go? Anything else? Yes. The ladies here are asking so many questions. Based on what?
The Trinity power, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, where Shiva is the destroyer, Brahma is the creator, and Vishnu is the protector. So, Krishna is one of the avatar of Mahavishnu. So, it's very, what you say, is totally contradictory. I'm not saying that, no offense, but it's... So
how do we find out what is true? Do we consult our grandmother or do we consult the Bhagavad Gita?
I can do both because my
friend
is
better. Bhagavad Gita seems to be a better option. Yes. Once again, I may think one way, you may think another, but let us consult the authority. Let us hear Krishna explain himself. If I wanted to understand you, I would hear directly from you or someone who you said is authoritative about you.
Then you should hear from me.
okay. And then when you explain yourself to me, then I say, no. I was told something different. Sorry. How would you feel? Yes, thank you. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, he, in his own way, he presents that so many people are misunderstanding me. He says, Name Hidu Suragana Prabhavamna Maharshaya Aham Adyahi Devanam Maharshinam Sarvasa. He says, no one understands me. The devas, the devas don't understand me. The great rishis, they don't understand me. Why? Because in every instance, I'm their source. I was here before them. I'm the origin of everything. So yes, Krishna has his expansion of Vishnu for maintaining and protecting the material world. Brahma is Krishna's servant. Shiva is Krishna's servant. But Krishna is beyond them all. He's the source. So you have part of the picture, but not the complete picture. We're talking spiritual science, not mythology or folklore. Okay? Now, if you want to verify Krishna's supremacy, it's not about blind faith. Enter the Bhakti laboratory. Krishna gives you the laboratory techniques for verifying its existence. Isn't that fair enough? So you're in Australia, give Krishna a fair go. Another question?
Still, I would explain from how Krishna comes, right?
That's the doorway that Krishna goes through to when he appears in the material world. It's like, okay, you can say, from that door, I have come. I use the door as a portal. So yes, Krishna comes through Mahavishnu. His own expansion. He comes through Mahavishnu to appear in the material world. If you just look at part of the picture, you think Krishna came ultimately from Mahavishnu. When you can see the whole picture, you see Krishna is coming through Mahavishnu as a portal. But just accepting Bhagavad-gita as it is, you can understand clearly. Krishna says, Matapratam Nanya, there's nothing beyond me. When Krishna says there's nothing beyond him, that means not Brahman, not the Brahma Jyoti, not Durga, not Shiva, not Narayan, not Vishnu, nothing. Krishna says, everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Everything. That's why Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita says, Param Brahma Param Dhamma Vitram Paramam Bhavan. Krishna, you are the supreme absolute. You are the supreme abode. Vishnu is also Bhagavan. Vishnu is Krishna's expansion. The example is given by Lord Brahma in Brahma Sangita. He says, you take one candle and you can light so many other candles, all equal in power, but there's still that original candle. That original candle, that is Krishna. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So, Vishnu, Narayan, they're all equal expansions of Krishna. You see, let's get spiritually scientific here. The complete whole, the Om Purna, not only expands himself into other into parts and parcels, but the complete whole can also expand himself into other complete wholes. That's the nature of being complete. Materially, you can't do that. But Krishna is not material. So he not only expands himself into living entities, he not only has the material energy, the spiritual energy, that Krishna can also expand himself into other complete wholes, other Om Purnams, but still, he's the original. So you can call Vishnu Bhagavan, that's fine. Vishnu is the Supreme Personality Godhead expanded from Krishna. It's like one candle lit by the original candle has equal power. But still the distinction that the original candle has is special. Okay? They're very good questions. It's very wonderful you're asking about Vishnu and Krishna. Very nice. So you were raised very nicely. And we thank your grandmother.
I have a quick question. Earlier we thought that Krishna is the supreme power. Whereas if you go to Christianity, they say Jesus Christ is the supreme power. If you go to Muslims, they say Allah is the supreme power. And same ideology, they also use that Allah was the first one, who was the first channel, and then came others. If you go to Christianity, they say Jesus Christ was the first channel, then you go to others.
Okay, let's take one religion at a time here. Jesus always referred to his Father. So Christians don't have much information about the Father, even though Jesus always referred to the Father. Because they don't have much information about the Father, they focus so much on Jesus. Which is okay, but there's more knowledge to be had. In Bhagavad Gita, you find out all about the Father. It's like Jesus would say, in my Father's house, he would refer to his Father in the spiritual world. When he was about to be crucified, he said, Father, if possible, let this not happen. And then he said, not my will, but thine be done. Okay? So there's various amounts of information in different spiritual religious systems. These children, when they study arithmetic in school the first year, they'll learn 1 plus 1 equals 2. That calculation is true whether you're in your first year or in university calculus. It's just that the student of university calculus understands the mathematics system much more deeply. Still, 1 plus 1 equals 2 is correct. Tell me, how much does 1 plus 1 equal? How much is 1 plus 1? Can you tell me? You don't know. How much is 1 plus 1? Did you say? Zero. Huh? Okay, very good. So, whether they are on stage and they know 1 plus 1 equals 2, or they're studying university calculus, still 1 plus 1 equals 2. But the university student knows so much more and can be more secure in the knowledge, where she's just repeating. So throughout the different religious systems, you'll find different levels of knowledge. Jesus just referred to his Father. In the Old Testament, what the Jews accept, they just talk about God, Yahweh. He's an angry God. Okay, in Islam, Allah. Allah Akbar. Allah is the great. They're referring to the Supreme. In Islam, they have knowledge of, what is it, 99 qualities of Allah? 90 or 99? But you turn to Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, you find that the deeper knowledge of the Supreme as Krishna will give you unlimited qualities of Krishna. Because Krishna is unlimited. So, according to your level, there's a particular religious system for you. You'll never find anything as comprehensive and in-depth as the knowledge in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a graduate study. It's like, I don't know much about cricket. I just know that, you know, Sachin is supreme. Is he still supreme or has he been eclipsed? Is he still supreme? Okay. That's all I know. You don't understand cricket, you know? You know this, some of you, there's this drug that makes people go slower called Valium? You know? So in the USA they say, when a baseball player takes Valium, then he plays cricket. A prejudiced remark. No offense, please. So, all I know is that if I'm in India and the India loses, then I know that there's somebody burning effigies, right? That's all I know. So, you have much more depth knowledge of cricket. My knowledge cannot compare to your knowledge. Still, the fact is, when we look at spiritual subjects, that some have a little knowledge, some have a lot of knowledge. That's all. It's your responsibility as a human being to get the most information about the Supreme possible. That's your responsibility. Okay? Look at the audience that Jesus was speaking to. Look at the audience that Muhammad was speaking to. Not very advanced persons. Jesus was speaking to fishermen. Muhammad was speaking to persons who lived in the desert. But who is Krishna speaking to? A quality person not available to him. Arjuna, the Punch Pandav, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nikula, Sahadeva, who is on that caliber? So because Krishna is speaking to persons of a much higher caliber that doesn't even exist today, he could give more knowledge. You can only speak, you can only teach according to the level of your audience. Jesus had to give very basic moral information. Muhammad also had to give very basic moral information. So you don't find that in Bhagavad Gita. You don't find Krishna telling Arjuna, thou shalt not steal. It's assumed that as an advanced human being, you already know that. Okay? Yes?
Where I'm going wrong if I compare George Bush with
Arjuna? What is he?
If I compare George Bush, American president, with Arjuna, where I'm going wrong?
Let us look at the qualities, let us look at the abilities. What? How do you see a comparison in qualities and knowledge?
Like both are, you know, fighting for saving their people.
No comment. I'm a Nazi. I don't take part in politics. Even though George Bush graduated from Yale the year before I started there, so. Let me put it this way. George Bush eats meat. George Bush's family owns many cattle farms where they slaughter cows. George Bush's family is very much absorbed in the oil industry, with interest in the Middle East. Hint. Yes. That is our standard.
Yeah. But there is Ramayana as well. There are some other Granth as well. Hmm.
Yes, Ramayan.
Like,
I just jumped from George Bush to Ramayan. Okay, what do you want to sit with here? Which horse do you want to ride? Okay, you're not supposed to do this question. You're much better to talk about Ramayan. Let me put it this way. I haven't seen a world leader existing today who has the proper knowledge in order to lead. I have not seen it. I've been on every continent in the world. They all think I am this body. They all think the world belongs to them. I have not seen the qualities of a leader truly benefiting people. I haven't seen that. They all think, I am American, I am this, I am Russian, I am this, I am that. As long as you think you're in the body, you're in ignorance and you can't do any good for anyone.
But for Krishna as well, you are saying that he believes that he is the only supreme power?
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains who he is, and he gives you the process to verify his identity. Okay, now can we move to Ramayana? You really like George Bush, huh? Not too many USA like him anymore. Most Americans are thinking, oh, just a couple more months of this guy. We explained the situation of the Kurukshetra, what the other side was doing. Remember? I explained that?
Wasn't it good, like, if he was rather than killing them, if he kept, like, by talking or something, he can, you know, solve the situation?
Krishna himself tried to negotiate peace, but he didn't listen to Krishna, but to speak to Arjuna. Krishna himself went and pleaded for peace. So many times Krishna tried to stop it, but they wouldn't. Also, Arjuna personally fought. George Bush, when's the last time you saw him on the battlefield? he sends young men off to fight. He doesn't go. Huh? Because what?
It's modern world, modern technique.
Modern cowardice. The heads of state would go out to fight personally, you'd see much less war in the world, right? No, they send letters, or they stay in a bunker, press a button, and launch some missile, but they don't go themselves. So Arjuna, he's truly noble. He is part of the administrative martial class. He himself personally goes to fight. Yudhisthira, Dharmaraj, he went to fight personally. So, this is different. So, at least understand that George Bush is a meat eater, his family, you know, Texas cattle farmers. How can there be any morality to that? speaking, I am this body. I am American. That means very little intelligence. All the world leaders make that mistake. As long as you think you are this body, you're an illusion. You can't tell anyone else. His family has so many oil interests in the Middle East. This is compromised politics, isn't it? Yeah.
What's his views about incarnation of Krishna in
Dwapara Yuga?
Kali Yuga.
Kali Yuga.
In what?
Hindu mythology.
Why are we talking about Hindu mythology here? At the end of Kali Yuga. End. Yes, end. So anyway, why are we using this word mythology? Let's speak spiritual science. Just like I might say, according to Australian mythology, you know, all the trees outside are pink. Huh? So many avatars appear in India, yes, that's true. Just like the sun rises in the east, the sun is for the whole world, it's not the Indian sun. Okay?
Huh?
But India is special. Don't forget it. It's a land especially meant for spiritual development. Yes. But if you take the special knowledge that Krishna has given, especially in India, and you take it all over the world, then you can stop Kali Yuga. If just 10% of the world's population becomes Krishna conscious, Kali Yuga is neutralized. So you need to learn the science of Krishna. No more Hindu mythology, please. Okay. We would like you to reference the authoritative spiritual texts. Okay? Remember, we don't want you going away from here being true believers. We want you to have the laboratory experience. I'm trying to inspire you to enter the bhakti laboratory, make the test, verify Krishna's existence, verify Krishna's identity, verify your identity as spirit soul. Remember the first thing we saw on the PowerPoint show, Stephen Hawking, his statement, "You're just chemical scum." One person agreed. Do you still agree? Huh? Is he here? No, he's not here. So, how to verify your spiritual identity? Shall you say, "I believe I'm spirit soul"? That's not good enough. You should be able to experience your spiritual identity. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving you the tools by which you can experience the spiritual reality. What more can you want? So many I have seen come to these programs, these weekend retreats, and then they take up the bhakti process, and they're completely different. They're experiencing the spiritual reality. I see you again. So we're talking about things far beyond Hindu mythology. What are you studying in school?
I'm doing PhD.
PhD in what?
Pharmacy.
Why do you need to study PhD in pharmacy? Why not just accept some ordinary street talk about drugs?
I'm in drug development field.
Why do you have to study that? Just accept some ordinary notions on the street about drugs. How do you don't need to study that, just accept all your street knowledge? Anyone on the street, any Australian knows, what is an upper, what is a downer, isn't that enough? Right? Well, I have to study PhD. All right, so similarly, you should specialize in the Krishna field and not accept ordinary mythological conceptions.
Yes, all right.
Forgive me. I couldn't have resisted. I'm going to use those words again, right? Thank you very much. Okay, any other questions?
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Before coming to Australia, I used to drink, I used to eat meat a lot, and when I came...
You're saying it's something?
I believe many of us are... maybe doing that or they have done in the past.
No. It's not true, right? They won't be, they didn't hear. Give them the microphone. It's not working.
That would be a bad thing.
Can you answer it? No. Doesn't. Why, you say loudly.
Okay,
before coming to Australia,
I used to drink a lot. I used to eat meat as well. When I came here last year, I attended your lecture as well. After that, I gave up drinking. I gave up meat, egg, everything, 100% vegetarian. So after that, when I went back to India, many of my friends told me, "Oh, so let's have a party." I said, "No, nah, I have I've given up everything." So. They try to make fun of me, or you're going backward, or you're still Dixie and all that. They try to make fun sometimes, you don't drink, you don't eat meat, how do you survive and all? So. How to deal with that pressure,
how to fight that pressure, because sometimes I really feel weak.
Change your friends. I can't change my workplace,
same everywhere. But then you just learn how to explain that your lifestyle is more intelligent. You learn how to explain how meat eating, drinking, all that, how it destroys your health. If you can't understand spiritually, at least they should understand materially. There's so much information available how those bad, negative activities destroy your health, destroy your life, your family. So, forget spiritual, even just from the material point of view, you're living a superior life.
How to keep a bit like that strength?
You need knowledge so you're not bewildered. So you're not bewildered by the ridicule of unintelligent persons. And associate with devotees, those who are practicing Krishna consciousness. They won't laugh at you, they'll support you. I understand what you're saying. You can't change the people you work with. You can't change them. Well, so you just have to expect that they are who they are. They're Australian or?
Yeah,
mixed. Yeah. You would feel better if you knew how to explain to them how your lifestyle is superior. They're slaves of consumerist society. They cannot control their mind and senses.
They always say, like, they try to argue with you, like, meat. Like, they can't survive without meat. Like, that's the best food or whatever.
Even materially, everyone knows that's wrong these days. That doesn't affect you, does it, when I say like that? Everyone knows, you know, meat diet is bad for your health. It's not a mystery anymore. Bad for the environment. You regularly associate with Krishna conscious practitioners. You'll be strong in that way. Deepen your Krishna conscious spiritual experience, and you won't be disturbed by young persons. They're so backwards. I mean, how can you say that? You must have meat to live. Even ordinary medical practitioners will tell you, at least reduce the meat. Everyone knows that these days. So these are very ignorant people, unfortunately. You have to be careful when you're associating with very ignorant persons. You may have known them for a long time, but still you have to be careful. If you're not powerful enough to change them, then you have to be careful. I don't need them to talk to me. I'll take care of them. Okay. We'll talk spiritual, we'll talk material. Yes, last question.
It's actually a personal dilemma. Like, before I arrived here, I was just texting my cousin and was telling him that the more I actually go to temple, I want to go to temple more. The more I do service, I want to do service more. But then on the other hand, if you're a medical student, you have to devote most of your time to studies and everything. It makes it worse if, like, all your parents' dreams are on you and you're the only child and everything. You have to study and do these things to do that noble job and everything. But then how does it work, like, if you have to cope with what you're experiencing, like you want to do more service, you want to go to temple more and more. And
you're in med school?
Yes, soon. Yeah.
Soon.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to med school, then do your studies. You have to have a balanced life.
Yeah, but then, earlier I used to go to temple, like, sometimes once a week, then it becomes like, I want to go more and more to the service.
That's a good hunger you have, but you have to have a balanced life. It's like someone may have a job, you know? They have to do their job as well as do their Krishna conscious practice. It's not either or, it's a balance. If you're going to go to med school, go to med school. What's the point in wasting time there? You can go and complete it. But don't forget Krishna. Okay? The school is a big sacrifice. Now, you're sacrificing so much in med school, you can sacrifice so much for Krishna. How many years in med school?
Probably 6 to 7 years.
6 to 7 years. Can you spend 6 to 7 years studying Krishna? Okay, so when you finish med school, you can do that. Okay? I have been studying Krishna for 36 years. Never got to the end yet.
So then I have other friends as well who had actually already started Krishna consciousness, but then actually stopped. is it? They usually tell me that once you've started it, don't let it go. Like, once you've experienced it, don't go away or don't try to get influenced by other things.
Why didn't what happened to them? The determination was weak.
Okay.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. Krishna consciousness is voluntary. Are you being forced to go to med school? Still, it's voluntary.
Yeah.
I know my brother, he went to med school. He runs a clinic now with 150 doctors under him. And, you know, he came to me some years ago with tears in his eyes. He said, "My routine, I can't take it. Every day the same thing. How did you avoid it?" Tears in his eyes. And he's a very successful doctor. So, because he doesn't have knowledge of Krishna, he's unsatisfied in his life. My youngest brother, he's a vice president of Toyota North America. Still, he's unsatisfied. So, be a medical practitioner, be IT, be even social welfare. Before you get your PR. But don't forget Krishna. That's the point. I've seen the most successful people in the world. And without Krishna, their life is so miserable. My youngest brother sits on the board for Toyota North America. I mean, not only USA, USA, Canada, Mexico. But without Krishna, what is his life? So, you're in school, you're choosing to do that nicely. But you can also be Krishna conscious at the same time. Okay? Wow, this is a very wonderful question and answer session. Thank you for such wonderful questions. I look forward to speaking more with you tomorrow. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.